Hi, and welcome to the very first episode of Do Good Radio. My name is Tanya Cernia, and I'd be really happy if you could join me for a series profiling the backstories of social entrepreneurs, not-for-profits, philanthropists, and generally awesome people, often ones that we don't hear about, and they're taking action on the issues important to them. Who are these people? Who are these crazy good people? What's the spark that gets people in action? That's what Do Good Radio profiles. Those people, those stories. And I look forward to sharing heaps of awesome with you. Today's profile is about Andy and Michael from 5-8. 5-8 is rhyming prison slang for my mate. 5-8 began through an unlikely connection between an urban housewife, a mum of two from the western suburbs of Melbourne, took an unexpected phone call from a young man serving a long sentence in prison. They connect over a song and both their lives change. From that phone call, not only was an amazing connection made, but the seeds were sown for an enterprise. Andy and her team at 5-8 are building a radically different model for supporting prisoners and ex-offenders. Today's episode profiles Andy Patchett and one of the program's participants, Michael. Here's their story.
My life started from the 2nd of February when I got out of jail.
I grew up in Geelong.
Grew up in sort of a rough area of Flemington and stuff like that.
I had a fairly ordinary middle-class family, fairly happy.
Loving parents.
Family holidays. Good meals.
My father was a bit of an alcoholic.
There is just so little to tell.
By the time I got to the age of 15 or something like that, I decided to go my own way. It's not that I wasn't loved at home, but because my dad was always drunk and stuff like that, I hung around other people where I felt accepted and I was out of control. I was using drugs and I started getting into trouble at a young age. There was nothing for us to go into the city, steal a car, chase off the police for excitement, you know. We could have killed anybody driving the way we were driving, but we didn't know that. We were too young to know the difference, I suppose. We got excitement out of it. And eventually going to youth training centre, then on to prisons.
How many years did you serve in prison?
From youth training centres and prison, around 20 years.
Andy, did you have any experience of people in the prison system in your growing up experience?
No, not at all. I can remember one guy in our community, but he was much older and I had nothing to do with him, and he just entered the community into our local church, and there was such a kerfuffle. You know, people just didn't know what to do with this man. He had committed a fraud crime. It struck me then, well, even back then as a teenager, that there was very little support for people who were coming out of jail, and my heart went out to him, I guess, in lots of ways. Around about the age of 18, when I moved out of home, an opportunity arose to go to a training event where I learnt about visiting prisoners. In this case, it was young women. I went along just thinking that that might be something I could be interested in, and I guess that started my whole journey. At that training event, I met my future husband. So he was the trainer. He was an ex-offender, is an ex-offender. Then many, many years later, after developing a friendship with him, we got married, and all through that time, even through our courtship, we would visit prisons. But at this point, it was not girls in prison. It was actually adult males.
Okay, so I'm going to put my little statistics hat on. And in the March 2012 quarter, there were over 29,000 prisoners in Australian jails. And depending on which state you come from, between 32% and 47% of those prisoners will return back to jail within 2 years.
Once you're in the system, especially adult system, it's so hard to get away from. I mean, you got the police that know you. They're always hassling you because obviously I'm doing the wrong things, so they're going to be hassling me. And it's just so hard to break that cycle. So, I just spent many years in jail, like, just for doing things that I knew were wrong.
What's jail like?
At 18, 19, 20, you know, that age, jail was grouse. I went to Pentridge, and at one stage I heard it get called Bluestone College, and that was because you'd go there and you'd meet other people that knew, say for instance if I was breaking into a safe, you'd meet someone that knew how to do what I was trying to do better.
So you're meeting people who can help you upskill.
Yeah, and just you hooked up with each other when you got out because you knew everybody. It's a never-ending circle. Because I had a few older relatives in jail that were doing big sentences, and so instead of getting What I should have got is like a kick up the backside and told not to come to jail. I got welcomed, you know, like it was, how are you, mate? You know, how are you going? And I got looked after. I probably should have got picked on and done it a lot tougher. I felt more accepted by these guys in prison than what I was at home. I liked it.
I guess I've been visiting prisons now for about 25 years and, you know, it was never something that I invested a whole lot in until probably about 4 years ago. That was a day that really changed the path of my life. When a phone call came into our home for my husband, and I took the phone to my husband and he waved me away. He said, I just can't, I'm too busy. And so I took the call and I kind of knew who it was, but I'd never had a conversation with him before that day, because it tells you what prison someone's calling from in the recorded message. And so I thought, look, I can't really hang up on this phone call. Sometimes you might be the only person or the only connection that that person has in jail to anyone on the outside. And I was really aware of that, so I accepted the call and started to talk to this young man. And during the call, I just asked him, what do you do all day in jail? And he told me, you know, a few little things, and then that he was learning to play guitar. And I said, wow, that's great. You know, what can you play? And he said, oh, I can only play one song. And I said, well, what's the song? And he said, oh, it's by Ben Harper. It's called The Power of the Gospel. That morning, I had been to JB Hi-Fi to buy the album by Ben Harper that had that particular song on it. So it was just like this amazing coincidence, you know, that we both had invested so much in this song. And it was like adding water to cordial. We became instant friends.
It will make a weak man mighty. It will make a mighty man fall. Fill your heart and hands, or leave you with nothing at all. It's the eyes for the blind and legs for the lame. It is love for hate and pride for shame. Now that's the power of the gospel. That's the power of the gospel. That's the power of the mighty power. That's the power of the gospel, yeah. That's the power of the gospel.
From that point on, I guess I started to invite people in to visit with me, to visit this young man, and we developed a real friendship, and he started to study tertiary studies. He started to connect with a whole lot of people on the outside. They were really supportive. And his world, like, just began to change, you know, his whole outlook. He had been so depressed, and his world had just collapsed around him. He was looking at a long sentence. His family had abandoned him. He was so isolated and so depressed. And we saw this amazing transition, you know, to someone who suddenly had a pro-social positive community who just accepted him unconditionally. We saw him change to this really positive person. I guess from that original little group around that original phone call, we recognised that what was just emerging in an organic way was very similar to this program that I knew about, that had already emerged in Canada, called Circles of Support and Accountability. It was basically the same model of building small pro-social communities around prisoners, getting to know them while they're in jail, and when they get released, they become that person's new community. So what we try and do is introduce a prisoner to between 3 and 6 volunteers who then visit, receive phone calls, write letters, help raise money if the person's studying, but really support them as friends and family. And so when that person gets released from jail, they move into the same kind of rough geographic area and the support then continues.
And how do you define pro-social?
In this instance, pro-social is people who don't use drugs, who don't have substance abuse issues, current substance abuse issues, because actually people who've been there, done that, are the best volunteers that we can find. Not doing crime, treating people fairly, abiding by society's laws, I guess. But I think in the context of 5-8, if we developed our own vernacular around that term, it would probably mean particularly being non-judgmental and unconditionally loving, not having high expectations but having high hopes for people. So there's a whole lot of peripheral stuff that really does define the best volunteers. And there's actually an interesting connection between this young man and Michael here, because Michael's process of change was aided very much by this young man too.
So tell us about this young man and your connection to him.
I knew him through friends on the outside, and he knew me through friends on the outside. How it all come about, I was writing a letter to my brother, and I said to him, oh, it's like I've lost my brother, you know, I haven't got my brother anymore. And he goes, yeah, well, one of my brothers passed away. And he looked at me and goes, and we both said, it's like the same thing, I will be brothers. And we just become really good friends. He'd give me advice, even though he's younger than me, for his age, he's a pretty intelligent person, you know, like, there's stuff I spoke to him about I wouldn't speak to anybody else. At this stage, 5-8 was already visiting for him. He introduced me to Andy and members at 5-8. It just helped me grow into a better person than, you know, what I was. It was major. It was a big change. You know, I'm grateful to him. I'll always be, you know, grateful to him for that. I was ready for change. You have to be ready to change. If you're not ready, you're not going to change. 5-8 come and visit people 12 months, 18 months before they get out. You can't just pick anybody out of the prison. You have to study the sort of people that, you know, like, because there are people that say, oh, yeah, I'll do it. But as soon as they get out, they break the rules. And I've done that in the past myself. I've got out of jail before with, say, $800 from me withheld. I'm expected to get clothes, food and a unit on $800. It cannot be done. No one can do that. So what I do, this is on a Friday, I get out. On the weekend, I'm committing crime to get money for a unit to start. Once you do that initial crime, you're doing more and more, and you just—it's just a big merry-go-round. You just end up back in jail,
just to survive.
Yeah,
the weekend.
Yeah. For me, I was that comfortable in jail. I used to start stressing out before I got out of jail. You know, where am I going to get money from? Where am I going to live? I'd lost my family. I mean, you got organisations that do help you, but they can only do so much.
So, Michael, how do you know when you're ready for change?
That's a good question. I've done so many years in jail, I was sick of it. You just get this feeling in your heart. Being at Marganeet, especially the violence program, it takes you all the way back from a very young age where you sort of went wrong. There's a part in it called the ripple effect where you don't know how many people you're real. I'll say, if I rob you or something like that, I think I'm just robbing you, but I'm actually hurting your family. They care about you. So you got so many different victims, you know, and that for me was, I don't want no more victims. If I've got 100 victims that I've actually robbed or hurt, I've probably got 100,000 because of their family and people around that it's affected. So, and I've got enough victims on my plate to deal with, you know, like, not that I have to do anything to them, but, you know, to worry about, you know, like, I've caused enough misery in that for people's lives as well as my own, so...
Did 5-8 give you a group of mentors?
Yeah, it did. I only had like two or three mentors that used to come in and visit me.
And what was that like when you first met them?
I was that nervous, you know, like for them to come in and see me. But when I was walking away from that first visit, I felt so good, you know, like there are people out there that care. Because there's no support for prisoners. Like I've had parole numerous times. Yeah, you have to do the community work and stuff like that, but there's no aftercare. There's nothing there. You got to make it on your own.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Do Good Radio. My name's Tanya Cernia. Today's program is about Michael and Andy from 5-8, a prison mentoring program which creates pro-social communities around prisoners and ex-offenders. I was having a look today about what type of support's offered when people leave jail. Jumped on the Corrections Victoria website. Here's what you get. Assistance gathering your forms of ID, for example, birth certificates. You get some referrals to housing services, info on Centrelink, employment agencies, details about drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs. And you're given $800 to find somewhere to live, get some clothes, get something to eat. And if you don't have a friend or family member able to come and pick you up, you get some transport to your nearest form of public transport. And that's it. That's the beginning of your new life.
We're often the people who pick someone up from the prison gates, you know, with their plastic bags full of clothes. And then from that time on, that night, we might eat together. You know, I think 5-8 is a lot about eating and drinking coffee together, isn't it? Would you agree?
I've lost one addiction here. I think I've got a coffee addiction now.
It can almost be as expensive, yes.
It's so much about just hanging out. Those first couple of months when you were just trying to find your feet again in the community, it was like we were joined at the hip and, you know, we'd spend most moments together doing community work, going around buying stuff for the enterprise.
5-8 to me is like, especially Andy, she's like a younger sister, you know what I mean? Looks out for me. You know, if I wanted to, I could probably call her at any hour of the morning if I was in trouble, and she'd probably be the first one there. Without these guys, I wouldn't have been connected back in with my family. I would have been using drugs. I would have been wanted by the police by now. Because of Andy, my sisters and all that have sort of accepted me back, and they love me, but one of my sisters, for me being in jail, she knew I was safe and I was alive. Yeah, eventually I would either kill myself or end up killing someone. So, yeah, so I thank Andy because of that. For me, I know I'm over it. I'm not going to jail for reoffending. We, as prisoners, need people like 5-8 because there's nothing there. If you've got no support around you, you are definitely going to go back to jail. They give me a purpose. Yeah, so far I've doing all my conditions, I'm doing everything right.
What I noticed in Michael before he was released was a person who could be really brutally honest about where he was really at. You know, and I think when I see that, I'm beginning to recognise that this person is really, really serious about change. You know, there's no trying to impress. There's a whole lot of just letting us know what he finds really shameful. He's been really, really open and honest about his past. And I think that level of honesty is a real determination of someone who's ready for change. And so I have to put it back on him and say, without that determination, someone getting out of jail probably can't change. But with the support of his family around him, then with the support of a group around them, that adds to his chances as well.
Do you find it hard to find volunteers?
Oh, so, so hard, yeah. Because the reality is when you're supporting someone whose patterns have been so self-destructive or whose patterns have been, you know, created by abuse and so they suffer deep depression, most people in the community don't really have points of connection with that. You know, so if someone isolates, for example, on the outside, they stop phoning, they stop emailing, whatever, their community, their small 5-8 community, I guess, you know, if that happened just between, say, you and I would start to get really sort of defensive and think this person doesn't like me, you know. But it's being bigger than that. It's knowing that actually the issues are determining how this person's behaving towards you. It's not, you know, it's not about you personally. It's about them and what they're travelling through, because getting out of jail is such a difficult journey. It's such a difficult journey.
And I guess that's one of the contributions a volunteer makes, is to be the person who's the bigger giver, giving even when you don't receive that affirmation back from the person that you're contributing to.
That's right. And I think that really is defined by maturity as well. But I think it's also defined by points of connection. So if someone has a background of drug or alcohol or substance abuse or addiction issues and they've come through that and they're living a pro-social life now, they make the best volunteers because they can see into what's happening. They can call people on what's happening. You know, if they see someone beginning to tell lies or beginning to act out, they know straight away what's going on.
They know it because they've been there.
Yeah, that's right. And one other important thing that 5-8 volunteers do is advocate, I guess, on behalf of the person that they're supporting. So they might be the connection between a clinician, a drug and alcohol counsellor, an agency like VACRO, which also supports ex-offenders. We often talk in court on behalf of people as well. So there's an advocacy element to what we do. The more structured part of 5-8, which has developed more recently, is the social enterprise. So we recently became partners with Corrections Victoria, which meant that we were able to take our own people, our own 5-8 ex-offenders, into our social enterprise where we teach people how to make stuff and sell stuff. And they make beautiful boutique products. We do screen printing and a whole lot of different things, don't we? Overlocking and sewing.
Well, I started doing some work there. I was doing it as me leaves from prison. I was having leaves once a month. I was the only guy there. There's all females there. I was a bit nervous, you know, like at first. But they make you feel like part of the family being there. You know, no one judges you or anything like that. And I enjoyed it. And then, like, for me to go out with Andy and go shopping to buy materials for sewing group, I would never thought I'd be doing that. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't mind it. I was doing things that I haven't really done before. I've done it, but yeah, in different ways. You know, like, I actually enjoyed myself.
And what do you make?
We make different, we got wheat bags and women's scarves, stuff like that.
Did that open up new experiences to you? Because, like, you don't look like a man that hangs out at the bobbin section in Lincraft.
No, that's right, yeah. No, yeah, I didn't think I'd ever be able to hop on a sewing machine and do sewing. Oh, I'm a guy, you know, like, us guys are supposed to be rough and tough, and here I am on a sewing machine, man. You know, like, when I first started going to the church to do the sewing group, and I went back to the jail, they said, "What'd you do?" Oh, I said, "I did some sewing," and they looked at me and, "What sewing?" You know, like, obviously they don't know what it's like. It was just because they made you feel, you know, accepted and welcome and all that. I didn't really care. You know, I used to look like I got back to the jail and I had to wait another month for my next leave. Well, I was driving to Madon to try and get me leave earlier to go back there, and, you know, like, I'll do more hours there. And it's been amazing. Like, I'm working, I have to do that now, but I still pop in and, you know, see what they're doing and stuff like that.
And also notice on your website that there's a Christian element to the ethos of 5-8.
5-8 was birthed in a church, but since our birth, we've really just, you know, a lot of the people that we support are Muslim or Buddhists or of no faith. You know, one of the things that we train our volunteers is that you actually cannot go into someone's home, in this case prison, and proselytise. You know, it's not about converting people at all. Prayer is not a prerequisite to be involved. You know, good thoughts are just as good, yeah. You know, if we had a wish list, it would be that actually the whole community would be activated, like right across from the Islamic community right through to Rotary. Wherever, you know, it really doesn't matter. Just jump on board and do this.
Yeah, this time around, with the support of Andy and 5-8, I've never made it this far in a parole before, so I'm working now, I've got my licence. I go to work and it's like, that's my drug now. You know, I enjoy getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going to work. I get more of a buzz out of that than any, because I wish I had found Andy and 5-8 like 20 years ago. I mean, I would have been a different person. My life started from the 2nd of February when I got out of jail.
What's the structure that people who enter 5-8 are under?
It's fairly fluid. We really do present as friends and family. I guess there is a commitment. So if someone's in jail wanting to change, there is a commitment to the group that I guess one of the big things is honesty. You know, we recognise that that's a process for people whose lives have been shaped by crime, but a determination to really live in community with their little group. And that's really hard work, actually, just defining what that is with volunteers and with people in jail, I think. It's learning to trust. It's learning to talk straight. It's learning to bridge cultures, you know, the subculture of jail with the mainstream culture and the community and all the subcultures that live within our community out here as well.
Because you're really trying to engineer relationships.
That's right. So, yeah. So
positive relationships. And yeah, even in non-prison situations, that's difficult between any community of people, and particularly when you've got people who have complex issues.
That's true. So we actually do have some formal structures. For example, all our volunteers have to undergo some training. Also, all our volunteers are asked to commit to at least 12 months post-release to the person that they're supporting. But we also tell them that that could, in a corny way, be a life sentence, you know, depending on how well you actually get on with the person you're supporting.
And so if I want to get involved as a volunteer with 5-8, how do I do it?
Okay, so we have a training day coming up, which we'll be advertising through our blog, www.58.org, and that will take you to our webpage or our blog, which updates you on current events and stories from the inside and the outside about 5-8.
If people are interested in coming on board with 5-8. You're helping people, you know. We want people to recognise that us prisoners aren't just numbers. We're human beings, you know. Like, and the more help that we can get off people that think, well, hang on, I might give this go, you know, this place a try out and see what it's like, the better, because there's not much for ex-prisoners getting out of jail.
And what would you say to people who are kind of a little bit frightened about being in such a close relationship with former prisoners?
Well, we don't bite, for one. But just to go along and have a look, and they might not, it might be for them, it might not be for them, but believe it or not, there is a lot of talented people in prison. We're just there because we made poor choices and mistakes. If you connect with the right person, it'd be worth it for both sides.
I would say to people who were interested in coming on board to come in with an open mind and open heart. They might actually discover a whole lot about themselves through this process as well. And one thing that we haven't talked about is what you get back. And you get a friend, and often a friend for life, who's so loyal because you've invested in them.
I just wanted to ask how you actually fund the project. Are you funded?
Are we funded? My husband is paid three days a week, and that's what we live on his wage. And I'm actually not supported at all or paid in my role as manager of 5-8. We have received a couple of grants, so we're quite excited about being able to put on a volunteer coordinator for a day and a half through the Ross Trust. And also we received a federal government grant for volunteers, which has enabled us to buy some equipment.
What could 5-8 do with a decent chunk of money, considering that it costs $93,000 a year to keep the average prisoner in prison? What could you do with that money?
Wow.
Save lives.
Yeah. We often talk about, you know, the amount that it costs to keep someone in jail and how that could be better spent.
There's so much more that could be done, but it's obviously everybody's saying, oh, we've got no money, we've got no money, can't do this. But there's got to be another way.
Like, each 5-8 support group costs virtually nothing. You know, it's coffees and you know, occasional events and things. They're kind of like self-supporting little cells. So, but what we do need is a much better sort of governance and structure. We need workers. We need people who can do admin. We need a manager, because my skills aren't managerial. My skills are making nice little cards for boutiques. And we desperately need this. We actually need a full-time volunteer coordinator, because our value as an organisation is our volunteers. You know, without them, we are nothing. Yeah, and to date we haven't done that really well, because we've just been so stretched. We need people to write submissions for grants. We need, you know, we need an army, really, because what we're doing is keeping people out of jail and keeping the community safer, and we're stopping more people becoming victims. You know, it really is, it's a no-brainer.
What are you most proud of about your whole life journey?
Well, I used to use heroin, and it was like a demon on my shoulder, and I'm very proud I got rid of that demon off my shoulder. And you know, I'm proud I got my family back. I got friends around me. They see Michael as Michael, not Michael the junkie anymore. And just little things, you know, little things just add up. Yeah, the pennies drop for me, and I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm happy with life. So yeah, it's pretty good.
What I would tell my 16-year-old self is, I'm okay.
Yeah, I was going to say enjoy life. That's what I'd tell my 16-year-old self. Enjoy life.
My name's Andy.
My name's Michael. And you're listening to
Do Good Radio.
That was the story of Michael and Andy from 5-8. 5-8 are looking for volunteers, people to make connections with prisoners and ex-offenders, people to work within their social enterprise, administrators, grants writers, volunteer coordinators. If you would like to participate in any way, jump onto the 5-8 website and drop Andy a line at www.58.org. That's 5-5-8.org. You've been listening to Do Good Radio. We're in the Twitter sphere. We're on the Book of Face. All those links are off the Do Good Radio website, dogoodradio.com. I'd love to have your ears back next week. Subscribe to the iTunes channel. I'll come to you. My name's Tanya Cernia. Thanks for listening. Till next week, do something grouse.